Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, a Pew survey finds Twitter and Facebook users are reluctant to express opinions on social media that disagree with their followers and friends. Does this sound like it applies to you? We will get reaction from Daily Beast editor John Avlon, a critic of online polarization. Also today, a challenge to the Ice Bucket Challenge. Do viral video campaigns like Ice Bucket funnel money to charities with the cleverest marketing people rather than the ones that are most deserving or most in need? Also, the New York Times declines to endorse Governor Cuomo for re-election in the Democratic primary because of his questionable record on corruption. We'll get reaction from two state Senate candidates. And Ashley Milne-Tite today on why women are less likely to change jobs than men. But first, the New York City Police Sergeants Union has a message for the Democratic Party. Don't bring the 2016 Democratic National Convention here. It's not safe. Ed Mullins, president of the largest senior police officers union in the country, published an open letter to the DNC yesterday urging the committee not to pick Brooklyn as the site for the 2016 convention. Maybe you saw it printed as an ad in several newspapers. The Barclays Center is one of the finalist sites for the 2016 Democratic Convention. The city, Mullins wrote, is, quote, lurching backwards to the bad old days. Ed Mullins, president of the Police Sergeants Benevolent Association, joins us now. Hello, welcome to WNYC. Thank you for doing this.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So do you really believe this, that delegates to the Democratic Convention would be in too much danger from street crime? I mean, this doesn't have the ring of obvious sincerity to me as opposed to a publicity stunt. Do you really believe this line?
Yeah, I do, and unfortunately the mayor is trying to change the topic by making this about contract talks. When you read the article, it's not creating fear city. What it talks about is things beginning to slip back to the days of old, and I made numerous references to, you know, the pendulum is beginning to slide the other way. We have a 13% increase in shootings, and you'll hear the mayor talk about how our homicides are down low. Well, please explain to us what we're doing about the shootings. And any one of those shooting victims could have been a homicide victim. What we're seeing is, based on this mayor's administration and his policies, is the perps back in the street carrying the guns. The police department's afraid to get involved in you know, policing because of the anti-police atmosphere that's here, and cops are putting themselves in a position of jeopardizing their careers and their families and their pensions, and we're not getting the support from City Hall.
But to hang this, and obviously you have your policy differences with the mayor, and we'll talk about them, but to hang this on it not being safe for delegates, as you know, the FBI compiles crime data, and I don't have shootings comparisons, but the latest figures that are out, which are from 2012, compared to the other major cities that are finalists for the DNC, Philadelphia had a murder rate of 21 people per 100,000 population. Phoenix, 8 per 100,000. New York City, only 5. So are you really saying, and do you have stats to back up, that those other cities are safer than the route from, say, the Barclays Center to the Midtown hotels where these delegates would be staying?
Well, I'm not saying that the other cities are safer. What's being misinterpreted here is what I am highlighting is crime is beginning to slide, and the shootings are the beginning of it.
But you're telling the DNC, telling the DNC, don't bring the convention here because it's not safe. You have to be comparing it to the other finalist cities in order to make that assertion that they shouldn't bring it here out of safety concerns.
Well, I'm making an assertion based on a DNC coming here in 2016 and the pendulum swinging the other way. You know, it's easy to sit and talk about what's there today. How do you know the city of Philadelphia is not going to have low crime stats in 2 years from now or any of the other cities? We're talking about where we're at today and what we're seeing as a sliding effect based on his mayor's policies. You have a hands-off policy for minor crimes, broken windows. What are we enforcing these things for? Because it's the little things that lead to other major arrests. So we need some clarity from the mayor.
They are enforcing broken windows, right? That's what
the
other side
is
protesting.
Enforce broken windows. It's a smoke and mirrors game. It's enforce broken windows until something goes wrong, and then everyone talks about why we're not enforcing it. Why are we not prosecuting marijuana arrests in Brooklyn? Why is that happening? We're not supposed to make arrests now Alpha Lucy's. I mean, you know, oh, well, that was a really minor crime. The mayor hasn't come out, you know, publicly and said, look, had Eric Gardner not resisted arrest, maybe none of this would have happened. Instead, it's the response of the police officer who is enforcing the laws based on the state of New York. If you don't want minor crimes on the books, then change the laws. You can't have it both ways. You can't invite a convention to the city of New York, which brings protesters and demonstrations to which cops will have to police, and then the mayor gets to sit back and say, well, this shouldn't have happened, and that officer isn't right, and this is wrong, and we shouldn't be doing that. It shouldn't be based on the backs of law enforcement. If New York City is the model, then New York City should dig in and present itself as the real model. You're against stop and frisk. You ran your mayoral campaign against stop and frisk. Well, you think the shootings have anything to do with stop and frisk? This isn't about creating Fear City. Remember one thing. Al Sharpton sat right next to the mayor and threatened to be his worst nightmare. And the mayor said, Al Sharpton's just speaking his mind. Ed Mullins, with 33 years of service in the NYPD and more coming, sits back and calls it as it is, and it's fear-mongering. Something is wrong with that picture when you have an individual directly threatening the mayor and a police officer of 33 years highlighting what's taking place, and we're labeled as fear-mongering.
Right.
The mayor doesn't get it, and he's not pro-police. It's just not that way. His character and his history does not indicate that.
Ed Mullins, president of the Sergeants Benevolence Association in New York City, and you have a lot in that answer, and I want to unpack a few of those things and look at a few of them. You talked about Lucy's, and you talked about Al Sharpton, and you talked about what would happen at a convention with respect to police and stop and frisk. So let's go down that list a little bit, because those are all really important. And you've cited the stat that shootings have increased 13% citywide since last year. And I guess you're suggesting that might be because stop and frisk is being pulled back. Bratton was on the show last month, and I asked the commissioner about the shooting stat. Here's part of his response.
Homicides are down almost 15% this year. Overall crime is down over 4%. Robberies, the bellwether crime of street violence, is down the lowest level it's been in almost 20 years. So no, in the sense of the focus on shootings is appropriate, but you put it into proportion, if you will. This year, even with the number of shootings, last year was the only year in the history of the city that shootings were lower than
this year.
So it's, you need to keep things in proportionality.
Commissioner Bratton here the other week. So, Mr. Mullins, what's your reaction to your member's boss there about overall safety in New York City, including that, yeah, shootings are a little higher than last year, but that still makes this the second year, lowest year on record?
Well, I will agree that shootings are higher this year and other crimes are down. What we're not talking about is this the beginning of this, the scale tipping the other way, which is what I am referencing. This, why are the shootings up? Because there's more guns back on the street. The perps are carrying them again. The perp that goes out to shoot his target, well, his target is also carrying a gun. How did that happen in the past year? What was the biggest thing to affect that in the past year? Was it not stop and frisk? You know, can anyone unequivocally say that it has no impact to what's taking place?
Well, the commissioner also cited a stat that stops and frisks were down tremendously, I think you'll agree with this, in the final year under Bloomberg and Ray Kelly, after all the hubbub, and shootings continued to go down during last year. How do you put those two stats together?
Well, the reason they dropped under Ray Kelly and Bloomberg was the ramifications of the court case and the policies of the department and the cops not wanting to be victims of the Community Safety Act.
Fair enough, but shootings were going down at that same time last
year. But crime was also going down at that same time. Crime citywide and the policies were still in place. So you're looking at those numbers based on the rippling effect of what was in place. What you're seeing now is shootings going up, guns back on the street, and is there a correlation to the stop and frisk policy? No one can say that right now. And I am not saying unequivocally that there is. What I am saying is that the scale is beginning to slide. And if the policies of this administration do not change, comes 2016, what will this city be looking
now,
like?
I wonder if your members, the sergeants in the rank and file around the city, want Kelly-style stop and frisk? Because Bratton also said this. We're going to play another Bratton clip here about stop and frisk under Bloomberg, referring to the rank-and-file police officers union, not your union, but the PBA, and why they did not like stop and frisk the way it was being done because of
the belief that their officers were being pushed to get too many stop, question, and frisk levels of activity. And we have dropped that level down dramatically and with no significant resultant increase in crime, with one single exception, and that's in the areas of shootings.
So do you disagree with the commissioner's framing there that officers felt they were being pushed into excessive stops?
No, I agree with them. But the pendulum part of it here is that the officers at the time under the Kelly administration, it was a numbers game, and it was wrong. And the community was somewhat of a victim to, I'm sure, many stops that probably occurred. And they have a valid argument for their expressions and their feelings. But the reverse of it now is policies that are in place to which the police officers don't really know where they stand. We're being second-guessed as to what takes place out there. And what we're seeing is an increase in guns, an increase in shootings. So what I do is I raise the question, is there a correlation between stop and frisk and shootings?
I understand.
The numbers are down, but they are down drastically.
Did your sergeants also feel pressured by One Police Plaza to have
their patrol? And so did the lieutenants, and so did the captains.
So where's that? So where's the happy medium, if that was too much and this is too little?
The happy medium comes down to using stop and frisk and all the other tools of CompStat as a tool of measurement to create accountability of what's going on. That's what the purpose of it is for. That's what Bratton designed it for 20 years ago. It became abused over the past 20 years. So you need to create clear and concise policies as to what exactly do you want us to do? Are you going to second guess me if I'm involved in a demonstration and something happens where someone gets hurt or I use my nightstick and all of a sudden there's 40 cameras saying it's excessive? Well, we have lost the presumption of innocence for police officers. And yet, members of the public across the nation are entitled to the presumption of innocence. That's not what's happening here. And we don't really hear any of the politicians coming out saying that, that, you know, give the officer a chance. There's a presumption of innocence. We have due process. We have a constitution. We are entitled to the same rights as any other member of this country.
You know, the court decision that declared Bloomberg's stop and frisk unconstitutional was very critical of your sergeants. It basically said it's sergeants who assess the constitutionality of their stop, question, and frisk policies in each precinct, and your guys were being way too loose with the Fourth Amendment. So why should we trust your judgment as to what makes good policing in New York City?
Well, I think our judgment has created the good policing over the past 20 or 30 years. You just highlighted all the reduced crime rates that are affecting the city of New York, and that's based on a judgment of what's taken place in the NYPD and of sergeants on patrol. Otherwise, you wouldn't have those crime rates, would you?
But what about what the federal court ruling said about the sergeants? Do you feel chastised at all? Do you feel like you don't want to go back the way it is?
Judge Shindlin's decision is Judge Shindlin's decision, and it should be noted that she is the most overturned federal judge in the country. So there's been many flaws with her decision, and she was cited by her own peers for some of the decisions that she's made.
So is this attempt to scare off the Democratic convention kind of sour grapes because de Blasio wants the convention and de Blasio stopped fighting that court ruling?
No, it actually has nothing to do with the court ruling. And it's not an attempt to scare off the Democratic convention. What it is notice of what's really occurring in the city of New York. And the mayor needs to be clear, and the mayor needs to come out and be supportive of the NYPD. And when you're sitting next to one of the most divisive individuals in the city of New York who's been nothing but anti-cop for the last 20 or 30 years, it's very difficult to question the mayor's credibility.
So there you're talking about Al Sharpton. Is he who you were referring to in your letter as anti-safety agitators and anti-safety political opportunists?
Well, no doubt. Let's look at the history of Al Sharpton. What has Al Sharpton really accomplished for the city of New York? We all forget the fact of Tawana Brawley. We all forget the fact that Al Sharpton is sitting right next to the mayor and he's got tax issues, that he's had previous cases with the federal government with to which he was working with organized crime, dealing with narcotics issues. And this is a person who's advising on law enforcement and having the influence to the mayor. Isn't something wrong with this when society looks as this as a valid voice of reason? Something's completely wrong.
Tawana Brawley goes way back to bring that up. But don't you need people who represent the community, representing the community in dialogues with city officials?
Well, you always need people to represent the community. But we have community board leaders. We have many solid families within the communities. We have many members of the clergy in communities who are reputable individuals.
And don't most of those people who genuinely represent, let's say, a lot of poor people in Black and Latino neighborhoods, have basically the same positions on police practices in New York City that Al Sharpton gives public voice to?
We haven't heard from them, have we?
Oh, sure. We have. We have them on all the time.
We see them in the court cases, and we have plenty of moms out there who bury their children. We're not sitting asking them what they really think. How about we march in, 500 mothers who've lost their sons?
Don't you think, and I'll say, we've had a parade of guests like that on this program, and the widespread feeling seems to be we need to stop the violence, we need to stop the gangs, we need to stop the drugs, and we need to stop excessive police policies.
Well, and that's their opinions, and they're entitled to the opinions, and they're correct on those opinions. But the people then that you're bringing onto the show, I have to, ask, what's their credibility? Are you bringing people who have a history of being divisive?
They're community leaders. They're members of local legislatures.
Well, then maybe these are the people the mayor should be sitting next to.
Right. And I have a feeling that the mayor is. And we haven't had Sharpton on the show on this, but community leaders trying to stop what they see as excessive police intervention would take major offense at your language, being called anti-safety.
I didn't call community leaders anti-safety.
You talked about anti-safety political opportunities. So even Sharpton,
Are you telling me that Al Sharpton's a credible individual based on his history?
I'm telling you that part of his history, when you get out of, the polarized media debate, is working against gangs and drugs in the community at the same time as fighting what he sees as excessive police policy. So anti-safety is insultingly unfair, isn't it?
No, I have to question, what your view of anti-safety is when you say it's, unfair.
Anti-safety means you're for danger.
We're looking at an individual who has been nothing but divisive to law enforcement. He hasn't worked with law enforcement. In fact, when you go back to the whole Tawana Brawley case, he completely disrupted a whole town on a fictitious case. And yet we give that credibility?
Hardly. We
have celebrities and senators and congressmen who misspeak, and we take their careers away from them. And yet we have a track record that's affiliated to criminals, unruly protest. We had the Crown Heights. We had Tawana Brawley. At what point do we sit back and bring in people of credibility? If the mayor wanted to work on relations with the police department, then he should bring in the real clergy people that you're talking about and engage, right, the police unions in some of these conversations. We weren't invited to the meeting with the Cardinal. We weren't asked to sit there and try to find a way to find a happy medium. That didn't happen with us.
My guest is the president of the Sergeants Benevolent Association in New York City, Ed Mullins. After his open letter yesterday to the Democratic National Committee not to bring the 2016 Democratic Convention to the Barclays Center, it is a finalist site because of safety concerns. Let me take some phone calls for you. Here is Ibrahim in Manhattan. Ibrahim, you're on WNYC.
Yeah, hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I don't even know where to start because your guest is so out of line and out of character. His attack on Al Sharpton is totally ridiculous. Al Sharpton, even Martin Luther King was assassinated. People were saying he was a bad guy. Al Sharpton is doing right for the community that he is in. And let me start by saying, number one, why are the police so rude? I'm a cab driver for minor traffic infraction. These guys will talk to you like you murdered somebody. These guys use their cell phones when they are driving without hands-free. They text while they are driving. They run red lights. They drive on the wrong way of the street. I was with my children one time, and the police car was driving on the wrong side of the street. And my children asked me, aren't the police supposed to obey the laws?
Ibrahim, thank you. I'm going to leave it there. Do you think there's a problem with rudeness, as he perceives as a cab driver when he's pulled over? He says they talk to him like he committed a murder or something when they're speaking to him about a traffic violation.
Look, I think that in any organization, we're going to have people who are rude or impolite, and we're going to have many more people who are, you know, not rude and very polite. You know, unfortunately, he probably met the wrong police officer, and, you know, to be rude and impolite is wrong. It shouldn't be that way. So I understand the feelings of what he's explaining, but that's not reflective of every member of the NYPD.
Yvonne in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hello, Yvonne.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I keep being confused between what seems to be a nationwide trend for crime to be down and shootings to be up, and then what gets discussed on the local level as if everything that happens is only due to what's going on locally.
So if shootings are up locally, are they also up nationally? I don't know the answer to that. Mr. Mullins, do you?
I don't know the answer to that. I know there's an issue with guns, and if there's a correlation to that, I think one would have to assume that.
Michael in the Bronx has a convention question. Hi, Michael.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, I noticed that the police didn't have any problems whatsoever with the GOP convention being here in New York City back in 2004. And the protesters, although all Democrats, were all peaceful, but yet the police roughed them up and even roughed up those that were not participating. I think the thing is that there's a political bias, there's a racial bias as well, and that this Sergeant Benevolence Association president doesn't want the Democratic Convention because any protesters would be on the GOP side, and I think that it seems like they don't want to touch the GOPs. There is a conspiracy going on here based on the history.
When you say, Michael, when you say any protesters would be on the GOP side, you mean they would be pro-GOP because it would be at a Democratic convention?
That's what I'm saying. It's in other words, it's the whole tables are going to flip right here when it's a Democratic convention.
Actually, I don't think that wouldn't be my prediction for what it's worth. I think this. It would still be the progressive protesters who would be in the streets at a DNC. What do you think about that?
I think that he brings up a very valid point of what you're explaining. But first, I got to say that, you know, our philosophy isn't Democrat nor Republican. There's a great line that the NAACP uses, and it's no permanent friends, no permanent allies, just permanent values. And you know, I think that the values that we subscribe to is for a better city and safe streets. When you bring up the GOP convention in 2004, it's a great example of what he's talking about because the NYPD at that time did take enforcement action of protests and things that were occurring, and it was an officer that was an assaulted with a bicycle. And as a result of that, we were the victims of numerous complaints with CCRB, lawsuits, and discipline. And this highlights exactly what I'm trying to avoid coming forward. I don't think that it's fair to put the police in his position when we're going to continue to second-guess them.
Well, I asked Commissioner Bratton, and I'm going to play one more clip from our interview the other day about the 2004 convention, and specifically I asked what he might do differently if Brooklyn is the host in 2016, because there were a lot of allegations that the police were directed to do mass sweeps, preventive detention. So many arrests didn't stand up in court, kind of on that basis. So I asked Commissioner Bratton, would you do things differently than were done in 2004 if there are protests at a 2016 convention?
What we will do going forward is what we always try to do, learn from the past, what worked, what didn't work, what was deemed to be appropriate, what was deemed to be inappropriate. So as we've come out of that period of time, as I've come out of many similar types of issues that I've been exposed to in my career, both experiencing personally, watching my colleagues deal with, you always attempt to learn. Policing is an evolving continuum.
So can
you try to learn from the past to shape your strategies for the future.
Can you be specific at all about how you would accommodate lawful demonstrations differently at a Democratic convention?
No, I cannot be. That we will accommodate them lawfully. That, and that, you know, basically that's the commitment that we have going forward.
So, Mr. Mullins, the commissioner refused to get specific about how they might learn from the past, you might learn from the past, if there is a 2016 convention. What do you think? Would you recommend any specific differences in how the police are directed to engage the protesters compared to 2004?
I think that one of the biggest things we need to do is interact with the protesters differently than we did in the past. I think that, you know, number one, people have a right to protest and demonstrate, and that's our job. The key is to get the message across to the leaders of those demonstrations that as long as they stay within the parameters of the law, that they will be given every venue possible for them to achieve their message, and try to create open communication with them before it gets to the point of demonstrating and protesting, to which then we have altercations that occur. Right,
having put it that way, do you think the Bloomberg administration failed to do that 10 years ago?
To be honest, I couldn't answer that because I don't know if the Kelly administration actually reached out to the protesters prior to that. What I do know is, as a result of that convention, police officers were injured, one of them severely, and as you just highlighted, there was lawsuits and discipline action that occurred. So as much as we handle protests and demonstrations on a regular basis, that was one that no doubt could have been done better.
So if you heard back before you go from anyone at the DNC, have they replied as to whether they're taking your concerns about safety for the delegates seriously?
No, and I don't think they will reply. Look, ultimately it's their decision, and they will have the right to choose whichever city they feel appropriate for their convention. What many people seem to not realize is that New York's a Democrat state, and their real value is not in New York. Their real value is in a state of a swing state. So the question will be what they base their decision on overall. I think the city of Cincinnati, they were looking at Ohio's a swing state for them. So
Columbus,
the leaders in the Democratic committee, I'm sure will do an analysis and base their decision on what's right for them overall.
President of the Sergeants Benevolence Association in New York City, Ed Mullins, thank you for engaging. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.